Okay, I'm going to post the agenda for today. I'll go ahead and get started since we have a packed agenda. I'm going to start with the IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you have not agreed to the group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. Okay, now I'm going to do connections check and look for a scribe. Okay, great. I don't see anyone unidentified. Any volunteers for scribe? Otherwise, I'll start going through the list. Okay. Is Benjamin Young on the call? Just for scribe. Bob Dolan. Christian, I'm going to skip over you since you're presenting later. And similarly, Christopher. Dan Burnett, would you be able to scribe? Dan Pape. David Lane. Drummond, would you be able to scribe?
Ryan just volunteered. Ryan Grant just volunteered in IRC.
Oh, thank you very much, Ryan. Okay, I wanted to check, do we have anyone new on the call today? If so, either add yourself to the queue or just speak up and introduce yourself. So I don't see anyone saying that they're new. However, I thought I'd, let's see, I can call on some aliases I don't recognize. HTML5 Cat, you want to introduce yourself? Okay, let's go to reintroductions. How about Ted Thibodeau Jr.? You want to reintroduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ted Thibodeau. I work for OpenLink Software. We've been active in a whole lot of this space for a bunch of years now. And I'm working both in the verifiable claims/credentials working group. So, not specific to mention, just here I am.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, let me go through the agenda, and I have a couple of sort of slight tweaks to the agenda for just announcements and action item progress. Let's see. So, we'll start with announcements and reminders. And Moses, if you're on, I'll call on you at the end of that to talk about the blockchain virtual conference. We're going to go to progress on current action items, and specifically, Manu, I'll call on you there to cover the DID working group charter, which you've made progress on. Then we'll move to work items, and we'll spend the bulk of the meeting on the UPort DID proposal is what we're calling it, but effectively, we have Pele and Christian on the call to walk us through a bunch of the new UPort changes that have come out and sort of talk about, specifically what their experiences have been around implementing a DID method spec there. So that'll be very interesting. I expect this to be very packed, so I'll just do a reminder from, I think, a couple of weeks ago to there's going to be queue enforcement, essentially, so make sure to add yourself to the queue. That's to type Q+ when you want to be added. And I'll just call out when things need to be time-boxed and freeze the queue if necessary. Okay, announcements and reminders. So just a reminder that we're using this new link. for listing the announcements. So up first is the Summer BTCR Virtual Hackathon, and that is next week. Let's see. So we have a Zoom room mentioned in the posting for that, and we'll have stand-up meetings Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. But on Tuesday, we'll have it immediately after this meeting. And again, for details, look at the announcements page. We are having a planning meeting for that tomorrow afternoon, which, you know, it's not essential to go, but if you if you're interested, just let us know. We'll pass on the invite. My data in Helsinki, that's August 29th through 31st. There's going to be quite a few of us presenting about various aspects of DIDs. Rebooting Web of Trust is going to be 24th through 26th in Toronto. I think we're just getting near the point where we're able to send out the official location and everything. And then following the 24th to 26th, there is a hackathon around DIDs and verifiable credentials, the 27th and 28th. So more formal invite coming out on that soon. TPAC is the October the 23rd through 26th in Lyon, France. And here is the link for that if you're interested in joining. That's where we'll do a lot of heavy proselytizing, I guess, of the DID working group charter. And IIW will be, unfortunately, during that time in Mountain View. So that's October 23rd through 25th. Let's see. Okay, lastly, I wanted to call on Moses, who's organizing a Business of Blockchain virtual conference. And verifiable credentials and DIDs will feature quite heavily in these talks. So Moses, do you want to give a introduction to that?
Sure. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
We can.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I just posted the link, and we're doing a virtual conference that's being co-produced by GSMI Web, which produces Blockchain East, Blockchain West, and the Blockchain Healthcare Conference. What I wanted to ask everyone to do is take that link and share it. The reason is this, that conference producers are like book publishers. They only back things if they look like they're getting traction. It's kind of crazy. They don't realize that they cause traction, but they kind of want to see if there's traction happening. So if all of you actually went out and just shared it, it would cause a blip enough for them to go, oh, let's put more resources into it. Because right now they're basically just testing the idea with one day. They have a second day lined up, but they're not going to do the second day unless the first day gets numbers. So we really need every single person here on this call to go and put it on your Facebook, put it on your LinkedIn, or blog about it. If you could do that today, I'd really appreciate it. And on day two, the first day is enterprise. The day two is more public. So a lot of other people can come and speak on day two. And email me if you would like to participate in that. They're actually talking about spinning this into a one-day add-on to their main conference. In 2019, so it might be the first physical public-facing conference about decentralized ID. So I really urge all of you to support this effort, okay? Does anybody have any questions about this?
Heather is on the queue. Heather?
Yes.
Hey, I just put my question in the IRC, but I see there's registration for this. I'm just curious, like, is that information going to be shared with the community so that we can follow up and otherwise
yes,
engage them with the community, or is all that going to be owned by these people?
The deal I cut with them is that we get the entire sign-up list. However, I have to hold it and make sure people don't spam it. So I will make sure that it's being used for announcements by this community.
So what's the transparency on that? Because then it makes me feel like, you know, you're owning it.
Yeah, I'm sort of like a governance group. You can create a governance group to manage it if you want. You know, form one out of here, make sure that we don't, because they can't allow the list to just go and be owned by everybody. It has to be, there has to be some sort of governance in place to make sure that we're not going to spam the list.
Yeah, but you just asked all of us to promote it to our networks, and so we're using our social capital and our networks and our contacts to build that list that then who knows what kind of transparency or we can use to utilize that list.
I can't solve every problem in the world, but what I can tell you is I'm happy to work on a solution. So let's form a governance group, like the current CCG governance group can manage it. I'm happy to turn the list over, but I can't give the list to everybody. If you don't want to play, you don't have to put, you don't have to post to your list and use up your social capital. But what I'm saying is that this is a commons play, and if everyone participates, we'll actually have a platform that we can all take off on. And I am happy to ensure that you get a speaking slot on the next day.
Moses, I understand this is a common thing. I just want to make sure that if we're all co-creating this, that it's not owned by one thing. And as I've written on multiple papers, that, you know, the organization you're dealing with has a capitalist model, and I just want to make sure that we don't have a tragedy of the commons situation here, because, you know, we have to all work together to move forward.
Yes.
I'm going to jump in here.
Yes.
Moses, actually, so I noticed Manu's on the queue. I figure Manu probably has some good input. The one thing I wanted to add before that is the library of references that you're aggregating looks really useful for the community as well. So it would be nice if we could see that. And we'll, if there's additional questions, let's follow up on this over email.
So we're going to make sure everything in the library is open source, so you can cross-publish it. But yeah, we're doing everything we can to make sure this is open and can support everyone in the community.
Excellent. And Manu, you're next.
Yeah, just real quick. I hear what Heather you're saying, and I also wanted to, you know, speak in support of what Moses is doing. I mean, Moses has been working really, really hard behind the scenes trying to make this thing happen. And it really is trying to expand visibility into all the work that we've been doing for many, many years now. There are going to be for-profit organizations that profit off of it and own some of this stuff. It is unfortunate. It's not fair. There are a set of trade-offs that we're going to have to make as we build this system out there. So, you know, I think, you know, Moses isn't the enemy here. He's trying as best as he can, but there are other people bankrolling, you know, these sets of things. And I think, you know, it's a balancing act. So I think, you know, this stuff being accessible and open source to everyone, mm-hmm. and us being able to point to these pieces of media that are going to be created as a result of this is a good thing. Like, that's a good trade-off. And I, you know, completely understand their, you know, non-desire to share the list too broadly. So, you know, maybe there's something like effectively the CRT that's created that can manage that list and determine its best use. So yeah, I mean, and unfortunately we have to make these decisions fairly quickly, right? Many things going on, and we have to figure out if it's worth participating, and whether or not you participate is completely voluntary. So if you don't, you know, feel like this is a good thing to participate in, then certainly don't do that. But anyway, yeah, I wanted to thank Moses for putting in the enormous amount of effort that he's put into this already.
So I've totally gone through this multiple times. As someone who has been taken advantage of, it's a huge red flag for me, because you can have people say things, but then what they do. And I totally understand Moses has done a lot of work, and I do not see Moses as the enemy, but there are no structures in place for people that do work that is not valued to actually be valued. And I am one of these people in the community that does work and is not valued. I don't have a business model with my participation in this community, and maybe that's my problem that I have to just come to terms with. But as someone who contributes to and creates commons, I'm going to advocate for everyone in the community to have value and benefit if anyone is getting that.
Heather, so I definitely hear what you're saying, you know, and I really want to address it. I think I'll create an action item for chairs to basically follow up to make sure, you know, because I know you mentioned this in a few calls, so I want to make sure that we're sort of making a more, focused effort, consistent effort to address those concerns. So let me create an action item, and then I need to move on to progress on current action items. So sorry to shut down that conversation. So for progress on current action items, Manu, do you want to talk through the DID working group charter that you've started on?
Sure. So there's been an action item. One of the things that this community is trying to do is we're trying to get the decentralized identifier working group going at W3C. And one of the things that's required for that is a working group charter proposal. So the W3C membership, which is around 400 plus members, are going to look at the charter and decide whether or not they want to put W3C staff resources and their own resources into the official standardization of this work. So the charter has been updated here. I'm suggesting that it's done enough for review. So this community, you know, the next step is this community needs to take a look at that document, determine whether or not it's got all the things in there that you want, understanding that we have to be super hyper-focused with the proposed work. Otherwise, W3C members are going to find reasons not to do the work. So the charter just proposes that we're working on one thing, and that is the standardization of the decentralized identifier specification. It's just that thing. It says that we're going to, you know, produce the specification, we're going to have an interoperable test suite, we're going to ensure that interop's going to happen, and then in addition to that, there are use cases and requirements that are not required but are probably going to be developed on the side as well. And that's it. That's kind of the core of the specification. So if you have a moment to read over it, take a look. If you have issues with the document, please raise them in the issue tracker. And there's an email with all of these links on the mailing list. And that's it.
Thanks, Manu. Marcus, you're up.
Question for Manu. The topic of data resolution. So Dimitri and I started a new document, a new draft, specifically on that. We haven't really worked on it much, but my question is, would data resolution be in scope for the working group charter, and would it be part of one specification, or would there be multiple specifications inside that working group?
So
can you speak to that?
Sure. There could be. So we could add it to the charter. So this is great, right? This is one of the conversations we need to have around the charter. We could add a DID resolution section to the charter as long as there is a spec that's been incubated and, you know, we're going to produce the same thing, test suites, multiple interoperable implementations. It does expand the scope of the group, and so people may object to that. Meaning what I was trying to do in this first version with this charter is just get the data model and the syntax down without talking about protocol. And then protocol would be in like a rechartering of the group to work on resolvers and DID auth and things of that nature. But if you feel like you can commit to the amount of work, like both you and Dimitri can commit to the amount of work that would be required to do a DID resolver spec, we could put it in there. So that's really, it's again, that's like a discussion the community needs to have. Do we do the DID resolver in the first iteration of the working group, or do we do it in the second iteration of the working group?
So, Manu, it sounds like the right thing to do is open an issue on GitHub and we can discuss it there.
Yes.
Okay. And Christopher, you're next on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out one of the key things also is we would need a second implementer, ideally using a different language and such. So, that's it.
Thanks. Sorry, Chris, Christian, were you trying to add yourself to the queue? Okay, I think we're all clear now.
No, I was just checking who's on the queue.
Okay. Dimitri, you are next.
I just wanted to say what Manu just said in IRC. We have a Java and a JavaScript implementation. That's all.
Okay, excellent. For the next action item, I want to call on a PR that's been open for a while. It is the DID Primer PR here. So basically the question is this ready to merge? We're starting to need the DID Primer for various things, including the working group charter. So, okay. Andrew, you're up.
Yeah. I got distracted by other things over the last month. Get working on it again. Related to that, probably is the recording, the how to set GitHub repo, and a respec document. I posted that the raw recording to you, and the link on the issue. So my apologies for letting time, but I'll get back to it. So.
Thanks. The audio is really choppy, but it sounds like you're on it. So just let us know if you need anything on that. Okay, next on current action items, let's see. So sorry to exploit the fact that we have our Uport folks here. So we have this issue that's been open for a while around JWK CryptoSeat specifications. Let's see. I think the question here was mostly around, you know, who should we assign it to? Any questions about it? Let me pull it up real quick. And actually, Christopher, if you want to, oh, okay, right, I see. I had the feedback. Right. So there's three specs that are mentioned. Expressing a JWK using an LD crypto suite, express verifiable credential as a JWT, implementations and test suites for those specs, and push this through IETF. If anyone has any progress to report on that or comments or clarification, add yourself to the queue.
That's also kind of related to the UPort stuff, so we could just fold it into UPort-related questions.
Perfect. Let's do that. Okay, so anyone have anything else they want to report on action items before I move to work items? Christian, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I remember we were... I think one of the things that happened was that what's his name, Mike something, who's working on JWTs at Microsoft, I think, was able to Mike Jones, yeah, exactly. So I believe he submitted some additions with the SECP 256 K1 curve, to the JWT specification. I don't know, did anyone else see that? Because I believe that's related, and I think that got through the IETF, but I don't know exactly the details.
Okay, thank you, Christian. We can look into that.
Yeah, let me try and get some more information on that. But that is definitely related.
Okay, thank you. Actually, quick queue check. Okay, nothing more on action items. So I'm moving to work items. And for work items, just speak up if you have any status to report. Here's the list. Okay, so I think if no one's volunteering, in the interest of time, I will move on to the next topic, which is the UPort CID proposal. And let me just include the link that, I don't know if you guys want to use this as a starting point, but we were using the Medium article as a good reference of the UPort, various libraries, et cetera. So I'll turn over to Christian and Pele to, walk us through the changes.
All
right.
Yeah, Pele, you want to start?
Yeah, I haven't followed the conversation on the mailing list. I don't know if you have, Christian, but I can go over the basic of the new Ether this proposal.
Yeah, I think this basically what people are interested in is the recent changes and work that we've done on our DID methods.
Okay. Yeah, so the thing we've been working a lot on over the last few months is this new EtherDIP spec. We have we proposed a contract and a way of resolving DIBs using this as ERC 1056, following the Ethereum standards procedure. And the hope for this is to have a DIB standard for Ethereum that supports any regular Ethereum address. It still allows key recovery or key rotation, adding multiple kinds of keys, such as multiple signing keys, encryption keys, etc., to it, and do it in a way that we can get the whole Ethereum community to support it, ideally. So the base for it is, the base identifier is just an Ethereum address. An Ethereum address is the hash of a public key using the aforementioned SCP 256K serve. And so anyone can create an identity by just creating a Ethereum-compatible key pair. But it also supports smart contracts, which are, for those who are not familiar with Ethereum, small pieces of code that run on the blockchain and are also identified by an Ethereum address. The Ethereum address does not support signing. I mean, a smart contract does not support signing because it doesn't have a private key behind it. So in that case, you can go in using the ERC 1056 registry, which I will get into, forms the basis for resolving the key, and you can add a signing key to it. So the big problem we're trying to solve is we wanted it to work well in the Ethereum infrastructure, We wanted it to be cheap to create identities. We wanted it to be simple to go in and update information about those identities, you know, make the changes to the BIP document. And we also wanted to be fairly simple to go in and resolve a BIP document. And this is a very major change from what we had before. So we've been using the BIP spec as a way for us to still support our old fully smart contract-based identity standard, I mean, DIP method, which is known as DIP Uport, or the Uport DIP, while moving to this new approach.
Let me jump in first just to frame things. So one of the main philosophies that we kind of come to over the last 6 months or whatever it is basically that in our previous system, you needed to do a blockchain transaction to create an identity. So we used to create a smart contract, and the address of that smart contract represents your identity. And this is kind of expensive, and so in the new paradigm, we're thinking more that any individual key can represent an identity by generating a DID document from basically the public key or the hash of a public key, and then you can have a supporting smart contract that can handle key revocations. So the benefit of that is that when you onboard a new identity to the system, they don't have to do do any blockchain transactions, because you can just have this hash of a public key, and it has a corresponding DID document. And then further on in the life cycle, you might need to do a key revocation or add some extra identity information, and at that point you would do a blockchain transaction. So that's kind of a little high level framing.
Thanks, you guys. We have a queue building up, so I'll start with Marcus.
So I was working a few months ago with the author of for the ERC 725 proposal to write a DID method spec. On top of that, I was just curious, what are the main differences between your new proposal and ERC 725. I think you already answered part of it. You don't have to create a smart contract in order to start an identity. So that sounds good. I'm just curious if you have any other thoughts on the differences. And another question, does this support service endpoints in the document?
Yeah, I can, or Pelle, you're on the queue, maybe.
Yeah, I was going to answer that. I guess we could do it on the queue, or should I just answer that?
Oh, you can go ahead. At this point, you sort of own it, so feel free to just respond,
okay.
And I'll
All right.
jump in. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so the big difference is that ERC 25, as you mentioned, does require smart contract for identity. It also, while using DIPs with ERC-25, you don't have to have on-chain verifiable claims, but that is the primary use case that people have had around ERC-725, which I think for a lot of us in the identity space are quite worried about, because you see a lot of people doing demos with PII on the blockchain, those kinds of things. But we see ERC 1066 as just being very focused on just the DIP document itself and not the claims part. We also have ERC 780, which would allow you for certain use cases do public claims there, similar to what ERC 725 does. Oh, and about the service documents, yes, you can publish service documents. That does require an Ethereum transaction with service endpoints.
I'm sorry, the audio dropped off a little bit. You said it requires what?
For the service endpoint, you need to create an Ethereum transaction to publish that.
Okay, thank you. Manu, you are next.
Yeah, so we had a chance to read through, at least at a high level, the ETHR DID library and the registry. And, you know, there are parts of it that look very familiar and parts of it that don't. I'm not necessarily concerned about the parts that are like smart contracts and that kind of stuff. You know, in the DID spec that we have right now, it says, you know, if you write a DID method spec, you have to explain how this, this, and this is done. Do you have any of that documentation yet? Like, you know, what's the algorithm for creating an ETHR based DID, you know, what does, you know, how, what does the DID document look like after you create it? Some other, you know, concerns that I had is I'm seeing a lot of jots all over the place, and I don't necessarily know exactly where those jots are used and whatnot. So it's really a question that has to do with like the DID method spec for the Ether DID proposal. Is there one, or will there be one in the next couple of weeks or months?
We do have documentation in the actual, I believe it's in the EtherBit registry spec. I mean, in the repo for it. I will find it and paste the link in here. It may not be completely up to the requirements, but we can definitely update it to do that. On the JWT point, that is a separate. That's how we use it. So we have the JWT library that goes in, plugs into JavaScript resolvers to verify the JWTs. But it should be simple enough to plug into any other data layer, such as JSON LD signatures. And we would encourage someone to do that. We don't have that particular need right now, but we would be happy to help anyone doing that.
Yeah, we haven't really created a formal DID method spec for this, but as it's been a little bit in flux, and not, you know, there was some modifications recently, but that's definitely something that we want to do to make sure we're compatible.
Christopher, you're up.
Yeah, I wanted to, you know, ask about some future compatibility questions. So, you know, one of my questions is if someone, where is DID information stored? So for instance, if I wanted to store an RSA key, a public key that could go into my DID, is that going to go into the Ethereum blockchain or is that going to go into an IPFS record that is pinned somehow by someone? So that's my first question. Second question would be, okay, so let's say you receive a BTCR, something simpler. Someone that has a UPort DID has a verifiable claim signed by some other party, are there any plans to support verifiable claims, you know, signed by other parties that are not necessarily JOTS? So it would be, you know, to the DID that is a UPort ID, but would you be able to validate a non-JOT verifiable claim associated with your DID? And where are those stored? So I guess that's my two questions.
Okay. So on the first question, like where are the public keys stored? So we use a feature of the Ethereum blockchain called event logs. So this is a fairly cheap way of storing things on the blockchain that isn't actually readable from within smart contract code, but it's externally readable. And it is obviously secured by the blockchain. So this allows us to store things like public key, service endpoints, all of these kinds of things, and we can look it up. So there's actually no longer need to go to IPFS for this because the data itself is stored there. We are looking at ways of also supporting more complex structured data on IPFS as well. But I don't think we've finalized that, and I'm not sure. We have a specific use case for it, but I'm not sure if it's generalized enough that it's needed elsewhere. This is specifically for identities who want to post some public claims about themselves. And that is not intended for end users, but more intended for businesses or applications that want to identify themselves publicly. On the other part and where like the data that is stored, so we have this, not on the data stored, but on how you could use this to work with verifiable claims linked data signatures. We have a very, very simple JavaScript library that we posted a couple months ago, and we demoed it at IIW. It's something that will be very easy to add support for ETCR, I believe, and anyone else who wants to do it, but it provides a very, very simple interface for DIPS method providers to write and add resolvers to it, which can then be used with the DIPJWT library, but should also be easily usable by the JSON link data signature library. Because as long as you have a DIP, you can resolve the public keys for it, right?
If I can add, the way I see it is that the claims themselves are always stored off-chain and, you know, in whatever means that you want. I mean, right now we store them on the phone, but, you know, that can be up to the implementation. And the way I see it with respect to JWT versus linked data signatures is that this DID method should be completely agnostic to that. Like, I mean, you could imagine taking any form of data any form of signed data that references a DID method, such as the EtherDID method, that should be able to be resolved without a problem. So I feel that can be made completely orthogonal. So it shouldn't be any problem at all.
And we would
I'd love to
go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so there's a hackathon the week of the 24th face-to-face in Toronto. It'd be really great if it was possible to, you know, try some of this interoperability and try some of these different types of things at that event. So I'm wondering if you guys might be available that week.
When will start?
This is the day after. It's the day. Yeah, it's the day after rebooting. Maybe the 2 days after rebooting. We're still figuring that out.
Okay.
We can look at it and make sure and try to make sure someone comes. We would encourage, like, if someone creates a BTCR bid resolve or for any of the bid methods, we'd love to, we can add them into our app as well. And once the JSON LD, once our use cases, like people who are issuing data using verifiable claims JSON LD stuff that we can consume, we'd love to figure out a way for us to integrate that using whichever bid methods people use to create them. We're also looking, like in the Ethereum space, there are other fine data methods that have become industry standard recently. So we're looking at supporting those as well and trying to bring some of the verifiable claim stuff way of thinking into that world as well. Again, trying to bridge the Ethereum world with the verifiable claims world. So we see, like right now, JWT is most efficient for our use cases, and we happily support JSON LD as well. Once our protocols about requesting and generating and actually people using them.
But I think, Marcus's, we also have a plugin for Marcus's Universal Resolver. So that can be a resolver that works both with BTCR and Ether.
Thank you. Bodin, you're next.
Yes. Hi. Sorry, I was on mute. I have a few questions, four questions. The first question is about, you mentioned that uport DAD may not be, it's too costly to anchor it into blockchain, so you can not do this. So the question then about the security, if someone anchors this DAD into blockchain, how you resolve it? And second question is related to this. This is about, I've seen somewhere in your specifications that you will be able to have the same DAD used in other blockchains. So how, if I'm correct with this, how the security of this issue also is going to be resolved. So for example, you first create DAD and anchor it into Ethereum blockchain, and then someone will take the same DAD and anchor it into Bitcoin blockchain. How it's going to be resolved? And another two questions are not related to this, but I will just say them. This is about visibility of DAD to end user. Do they see them, or they are just hidden and never seen by users? And if they can be seen, are there ability for users to select them, so like have them human readable or have some vanity DAD value?
All right. So the anchoring, it's interesting. We use a property of the K curve that's used by Ethereum to be able to do a lookup that really isn't actually a lookup as a default. So we use, basically what we do is we go in and if someone gives us a bid, the first thing we do, we check on the blockchain if any changes have been made to that bid. After that, we If there aren't any changes to be made for it, the Ethereum address itself is the public key in the DIP document sense. Now, obviously, the Ethereum address is a hash of a public key. So for that, we have we are using a same trick that the Ethereum blockchain uses, which uses recoverable signatures. Essentially, it's just adding an extra byte, it probably has an official term, but I think people normally call it the recovery byte, to the signature. And with that, we can generate the public key that was used to sign it, and just verify that that is the same, the hash of that public key is the same as that hash. So for that, our slight change to the DIP document that we need to do this trick, and the same trick should be usable for Bitcoin as well.
You've got some music.
Now we break for commercials.
Somebody's on mute.
Everything was brought by Toyota trucks.
Hey there. Heard you guys like DIDs.
Wow.
Verifiable credentials. Talking about get off. Centralized management system. Ooh, girl.
I have to call.
I'm not so sick, happy. So sick, happy.
Is there any way to isolate
it? All right.
It was jungly.
That was,
that was awesome.
Incredible. Okay, I forgot where we were.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about the recoverable signatures. So we use this trick where we, recoverable signatures that should be usable with Bitcoin as well. It's basically cool because you don't actually need.
You said you don't need. Did we lose you, Pele?
Yeah, I think we lost Pele.
Okay.
He fell victim to Nicaraguan internet.
Wow.
Or I think he's in Miami now. Anyway.
We're on someone's radar.
So I can there was a question of if you anchor on one chain and then you anchor on another chain, like that's not really supported, because what happens is when you first create the identity, it's actually not you need to go to a specific Ethereum smart contract as the reference point and check if it has had any updates there. Then you get the updates from that contract. If not, you generate a DID document directly from the public key. So there's not anything going on with anchoring first on one blockchain and then later anchoring on another. And I think there was some question about can someone take your DID and register it themselves, and kind of use that to impersonate you. So the answer is no, because you can always claim to have a specific DID, but when you really want to use that DID, you need to create a signature with the private key. And so if you don't have the corresponding private key, then you can't prove the ownership of that DID.
Marcus, you are next.
Yes, Pelle may have explained that already, but I'm not sure. So when the DID document is created, would it contain public keys or the Ethereum addresses? There's an open issue on the DID spec GitHub repository on whether DID documents should be allowed to contain Ethereum addresses, which are hashes of public keys, as opposed to the public keys themselves. I'm just asking for clarification how you're planning to do it.
Yeah,
we require the Ethereum address to be stored in the DID document.
I'm not sure if I got that, but yeah, Marcus, to your point, we were doing that in BTCR for a while. Actually, we have our BTCR hackathon coming up. I don't remember where we landed on that, but yeah, I think that where we are now is we're just adding hex encoded public key rather than the addresses. But there was definitely interest in storing the addresses as well. So. I see. So you pointed to the issue. Marcus included an issue number 56 on the DID spec. Okay, we're running short on time. Let me see who we have next. Ryan. Ryan, are you
muted? Hi. Can you ask me so I can remember my question? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. So the DID method resolver code, you're using Marcus's library. If you were to benefit from any other donations of code, what form, library, or languages would you be looking for?
So we actually have our own resolver library as well, written in JavaScript. I guess JavaScript is what we're using most. I don't know, Pelle, if you have any other needs there.
We are working on the resolvers as well for Java and Swift. For mobile implementers, and I think there may be public repos for them. But I would encourage people in other languages to create something similar to the generic abstract DID resolver and a way of registering DID resolvers into it, so we can get it out into wider space rather than just the JavaScript space. And if there is that kind of that. Then obviously we would encourage others to implement EtherDIP resolvers for those particular languages, you know, like Ruby or Python or whatever. But I think the first thing is to have a generic DID resolver infrastructure for that particular language, and feel free to use the JavaScript one that we have as a template. It's just it's an extremely lightweight way of registering a resolver and then resolving. And obviously it should be done in a way that makes sense for the particular language or platform.
And I'm going to close with Eric.
Howdy, y'all. I've been following what you Porthan doing in the DID stuff, and was curious if you guys we're working on any integrations with LDAP or any sort of existing directory structures to be able to extend them with, sovereign identity effectively. Thank you.
Short answer, no. There may be people using UPort to integrate like the directory and other, and LDAP. I'm not sure of it though.
We have had some talks with Microsoft about those things, but there's not really anything that's very concrete.
I have
some ideas about it, but it's, we can probably take that offline.
Got it.
Manny, did you want...
Yeah, so my question was for Eric. Are you specifically just talking about the Ethereum DID method, or are you talking about decentralized identifiers in general?
Decentralized identifiers in general.
In that case, that is a very, very interesting question. It has not really come up before, but a number of us have kind of been talking about that in the background, how to extend existing legacy systems to enable self-sovereign identifiers. If you're interested in working on that, please reach out so that we can kind of collaborate on that.
One of the more interesting things I've seen in that respect is connecting Kerberos to... to Active Directory, and then using the public key PKI, capabilities of Kerberos to sign Kerberos tickets with your DID, basically. That's something that's kind of I've been thinking about a little bit, but I haven't done any active work on it.
Hey, thank you, everyone. We are over time. It was a great discussion today, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks all. Bye.